Your name?
Anthony Harvey.
And you write for?
The In-Towner newspaper.
Anthony Harvey, an issue you've been following for a couple of years now is of particular interest to WPFW listeners. WPFW is housed in the City Paper Building at 2390 Champlain Street Northwest in Adams Morgan, where we're talking now. And there are some very interesting but not very well publicized things that are happening. Go into some detail about the future plans for this building.
The current future plans for the building are its demolition and its replacement with a 90-foot, 10-story luxury hotel, a glass tower that would be connected to a restored and adapted First Church of Christ Science building that faces Euclid and Columbia Road.
How well does this project fit in with the neighborhood, would you say?
It's totally different from the neighborhood in its height and its massing, and it would be the first hotel in the neighborhood as well, with a supper club in the church building, bars and restaurants, and a very new setting in this residential part of Adams Morgan.
You've been following this deal for a couple of years. It's now quite a massive deal. Ed Lazier of the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute testified before Jack Evans, chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee on the D.C. Council, and pointed out that this is going to receive some $61 million in tax breaks, 15 years of tax breaks. This is not the original plan that you've been covering for 3 or 4 years ago.
It is not. The original plan was to extend the back of the church building with a condominium apartment development that would retain the same height and massing, the same structural impact on the neighborhood as the church itself, and, for example, the apartment building directly across Champlain facing Euclid. The development would also feature some affordable housing units and some improvements to the navigability of the alley behind the City Paper Building, making it less of a bottleneck and improving the pedestrian sidewalk on Champlain and providing the community with 4,500 square feet of community use space in the basement level of the old church building. The big attractiveness of the proposal to the historic community was that it would restore the building, the church building, which is badly in need of restoration.
The church building is being restored, and yet with this massive project coming in, it's displacing, well, WPFW will be looking for another place because we're in the City Paper Building. You said the storage facility for city bikes, and that's just directly, indirectly, with such a massive project coming in, it might displace other mom-and-pop stores. And can you describe this area a bit for people who might not have a feel for it?
Well, the area is essentially low-rise with row house-type structures along 18th Street that always had some street-level retail, restaurant, and nightlife establishments. And it's had its ups and downs over the years. But Columbia Road, which is another major artery here in Adams Morgan, is much the same, except it also has some tall apartment buildings. So it's part of the 1920s apartment building boom in Washington, D.C., and even later. But the the whole environment of Adams Morgan is not an environment of in this immediate area of 90-foot glass towered hotel buildings.
I wanted to read to you, Anthony Harvey, the testimony from Ed Lazier of the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute, speaking before the Committee on Finance and Revenue at the D.C. Council and Chairman Jack Evans. Quote, this is a 15-year, 100% property tax abatement to the owner of a luxury boutique hotel operated by Marriott. Actually, I want to pause right there for a second. Marriott is the same company. Now, it's different with regard to the Convention Center Hotel. Marriott will be the complete owner of and operator. And that's a $272 million tax break, which has recently gone through. And here you have $61 million Marriott will own, but they'll operate this boutique hotel. This is a lot of money, $61 million, $272 million in Marriott-affiliated projects at a time when the city is making cuts elsewhere. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, the shortfall in revenue and the overspending in the current city administration has caused the D.C. Council to vote a freeze on salaries and anticipates further cuts in city services to come up with a balanced budget. And the alarms and warnings are already in place that further losses of tax revenues may be off the table.
Continuing with Ed Lazier's testimony before Chairman Jack Evans, quote, DC FPI, DC Fiscal Policy Institute, opposes this bill for a few basic reasons. One, there is no evidence that the owners need public assistance to build this project. Two, the tax abatement would result in a substantial loss of tax revenue for the district, $61 million over 15 years. Three, it is unclear what benefits the district would receive from the project, making it difficult to assess whether the proposed $61 million costs and lost tax revenue are justified. Four, plans for the hotel include a restaurant and bar, granting a tax break to these establishments, but not to the longtime owners of neighboring restaurants and bars in Adams Morgan Nightlife District, would give an unfair competitive advantage to the hotel. Very simply, this bill is yet another example of bad economic development policy in our city. The use of tax abatements and other economic development tools should be to create incentives to build projects that would not otherwise move forward and that offer substantial benefits to the district. End quote. Your response, Anthony Harvey?
It is an irony that the Marriott Corporation, the world's most successful operator of hotels and similar facilities, and Ian Schrager, who would be whose hotel it would be, the most successful creator of these high-end luxury boutique hotels. You know, the idea that they need tax subsidies to continue to be so successful is an irony. And the unfair competition is painful, especially in this economic downturn where restaurants and nightlife venues are suffering in Adams Morgan. They're not doing well. And you see more and more closed shutters, and the idea of bringing in a tax-subsidized competitor is something that should be thought about.
And on that tax subsidy, the number I remember reading was $21 million. And then all of a sudden now we're seeing actually it looks like more like $61 million. There was a poster I saw about the baseball stadium, stopped the $440 million giveaway. Well, it's turned out to be an awful lot more than $440 million. It seems like, and the timing is also interesting, this hearing was held just after the primary elections is when we learned that it would be $61 million. Your thoughts on that? It seems that the numbers seem to escalate as we get closer to a project being finished or being started.
Well, that unfortunately is a D.C. tradition. You know, first a successful developer you know, announces an agreement with the district. Sometimes an agreement that's been a competitive procurement, and without the public really being aware, that agreement is then renegotiated time and time again to find new ways to benefit the developer with property tax abatements, with tax incentive financing, TIFs, a variety with further zoning variances, and the cost in effect to the taxpayer and to city revenues just continues to escalate.
Brian Friedman is the developer for this project to be this large hotel here in Adams Morgan, displacing the City Paper building where WPFW is housed. He told the Washington Business Journal that, quote, it's like any other hotel built in this city. There's always a subsidy, end quote. He should get a subsidy. There's always a subsidy for these high-end hotels.
Well, I don't think there's always a subsidy. And if there is, it means that they all should be further examined. And my limited experience with the developer is that he's a very creative and innovative developer. And I would put him in the same category with Marriott and Schrager in saying that they certainly know how to do a deal. And the idea that it's only doable with D.C. Tax incentives or abatements, well, I think that's a dubious argument.
Anthony Harvey, while we're talking about major subsidies, $61 million for an upscale hotel, just a little bit earlier, Friday was apparently the last day for La Casa Shelter, also in Columbia Heights. And it would never saw the type of investment in any way, shape, or form that we're talking about the government putting into an upscale hotel. That shelter is now closed. It came just a little bit after the two-year closure of Franklin Shelter. This area is now really without shelters, and the investment seems to be focused more on upscale hotels. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it belies the commitment of the district to inclusive neighborhoods and to a compassionate approach to people who are in difficult straits or simply people who are very different. And the cost savings one could find in devising more humane and more compassionate approaches to dealing with the most vulnerable people in the neighborhood and including them in these neighborhoods as they improve and make the urban experience a delight. It really is shameful. And La Casa is a prime example of a district government failing in its commitment to providing a safe and purposeful environment for homeless people and to have the kind of programs that take people out of homelessness and in effect integrate them into a culture that is supportive of people from all stratas.
The food, the services, they're in this area. They're downtown, Franklin Shelter, 13th and K Street, Northwest, La Casa and Columbia Heights. These are the shelters that have closed, putting people in the farthest out areas where they don't have access to services, jobs, food. Your thoughts on this trend? Has it gotten worse recently? It seems to be a trend to push people farther aflung, the poorest people.
It certainly is a trend that just continues to be more disturbing. And often, progressive people, you know, are supportive of that. And one wonders why progressive people would support moving these vulnerable people into kind of a no man's land, a gulag, in far southeast, instead of working to make their presence a more compatible presence with the mainstream population. And it's occurred all over the downtown area. The Congregational Church next to the Martin Luther King Library Building, with its extraordinary programs and its willingness to work with, you know, the most vulnerable of the vulnerable, and the failure of the district to provide daytime activities for this vulnerable group of any kind, you know, recreational, sheltered jobs, whatever, force them to simply camp out, either camp out in the library and drive out other library users, or accost people panhandling because they panhandle because it's effective, you know, not because that's the only way they can think of getting any kind of cash income, but it's effective, and it's disturbing. But instead of working with the root cause and providing the sheltered alternatives that we've always preached, and we've always preached the idea of a sheltered approach to help people live independently, and yet we've never been willing to invest in those sheltered structures. And now it's almost like now we want to go back to the dark days of institutionalizing people, putting them far away in, you know, old-fashioned kind of psychiatric prisons.
Anthony Harvey, the areas that you've covered and you cover are gentrifying or gentrified. And I was wondering, what's your definition of gentrification?
There's so many definitions of gentrification, and of course those opposing gentrification oppose it because it traditionally displaces people. It goes in gentrification, a phenomenon that developers push forward, means often bulldozing existing buildings and creating new buildings that are massive and displaces people who've lived forever in a neighborhood, displaces the old-fashioned mom-and-pop retailers and the old-fashioned mom-and-pop restaurants and neighborhood taverns, the little bookstores, the little antique shops. And it creates a kind of a brave new world. And it's a brave new world for those in the mainstream. And gentrification, for those who see it as a positive, just see the positive aspects, does at times mean a diminishing of street crime, a diminishing of aimless people wandering the neighborhood, and diminishes the decline in property values, the decline in tax revenues that support the schools and the libraries and parks and rec centers. But we tend to deal with gentrification as a phenomenon by ignoring its ramifications and just letting it be a free form battle between those who oppose and those who have the economic muscle to go into the development projects.
I wanted to return back to here, to the City Paper Building, where WPFW is housed. The Historic Preservation Review Board wanted to preserve the church at the corner, which will be preserved as part of the hotel. This building will be leveled. Do you have any thoughts about the Historic Preservation Review Board preserving buildings like the church, but not preserving necessarily the communities that have made this community so special. Because by building this seriously, as maybe out of place in its scale, large hotel, directly impact displacing some, indirectly as property values, taxes go up, displacing others, it may be not preserving, but doing just the opposite with the communities who are here.
Well, I think that's a good point. And once again, it's the irony of some of the same people who are the heroes of saving the neighborhood from expressways and from bulldozing in a fashion similar to the Southwest, where whole neighborhoods were destroyed and a really sterile high-rise buildings built in their place. These same people who've been heroic in preserving much of the built structure are continuing, of course, with their historic preservation protective approach to buildings, but I think have lost sight of the other and even more important aspect of historic preservation, and that's to preserve communities, you know, neighborhoods, people who live and work and go to school, shop, enjoy the nightlife, you know, preserving all of that. And City Paper and WPFW and City Bikes, you know, are among the establishments that have given Adams Morgan its cachet as a fascinating multicultural community. And to just see them lost, I'm astounded that there's not been more community concern for that.
Anthony Harvey, how did you clearly have a passion for the people who you cover. How did you come to join the Enquirer and find yourself as a journalist?
Well, I had the good fortune of retiring from working on the Hill, and could personally afford the luxury of being a community news reporter, since it is not a lucrative enterprise. And I've always enjoyed communities, and the Calorama, Adams Morgan, DuPont Circle communities are a fascinating mix. And I'm a great art lover as well. Initially was asked to do some art reviewing. And so I continue to do art reviewing. But then I got into covering neighborhood controversies over historic preservation and zoning and some of the licensing and land use issues. And it gave me an understanding of local government and local communities that I would have never otherwise had.
Any final thoughts you want to share?
Well, the development in Adams Morgan, that part of the development that improves the streetscape and improves the safety, pedestrian safety, vehicular safety, and street crime, you know, I applaud enthusiastically, but I still look for some improvements in neighborhood and community schools and parks, and then the abysmal absence of a public library for the Adams Morgan, DuPont Circle, and Calorama areas.
There's no library here.
No. It's astounding.
This is one of the most densely populated parts of the city.
Yes, and one of the most interesting parts of the city in terms of people who read, who write, who argue in the coffee shops. I mean, and there is no branch library.
Why is that?
Just the crazy quilt way that branch libraries were developed in the district, with it primarily being activist council members, you know, demanding libraries in their wards. And council members in other wards either being indifferent or overlooking the need in these, as you point out, densely settled parts of the district.
There's another library you've covered, I realized, West End Library. Very interesting situation going on there. Can you talk about that?
West End Library is the one library site that the district public library system has lost control of the site. The libraries were allowed to almost self-destruct and are only now coming back, and coming back beautifully with new buildings, new staffing, new services, a very progressive library administration, and a very supportive library board. But the development pressures over the library real estate, the one thing the library system really was left with was wonderful real estate. And the developers were eager to capture that real estate, either in total or with so-called public-private partnerships, where new structures would be built and the library would be shoehorned into some part of that structure. Well, the West End Library is on a strategic corner there at L and 24th, yeah. Or 23rd. But anyway, it's right there, and then the Metropolitan Police Department has their special operations branch next to it. And a block away is the fire station. Well, the grand idea arose in the development community, which includes, of course, the deputy mayor for economic development and his or her staff, that here would be a site to capitalize on all this invaluable real estate. And thus, a project arose. Initially, it was simply sprung on the D.C. Council as a fait accompli. And the outcry was such that the city had to go back to the drawing board. But the ironical conclusion is the same developer got the project.
Anthony Lanier.
Yes, and East Bank. And the library loses its control of the site and will be part of a luxury condominium building on that site that includes both the library, the MPD building, and a surface parking lot behind that East Bank controls. In exchange, East Bank will construct a new fire station with some affordable housing above it. And the contrast between what's going to occur here and the library's successes at Tenley and Shaw and Benning and Anacostia could not be more stark.
What's the difference?
The difference is the library is simply there part of a building, a commercial building. And it doesn't say to the community what the old-fashioned City Beautiful library building or these new structures and new programs the library has in the four sites I mentioned. It doesn't say, you know, here is something, a civic structure, a civic function that's very critical to the neighborhood. The library just becomes another part of a building where the focus is on street-level retail, condominiums, expensive condominiums that GW students can't afford, and the commercial control to keep out the homeless, which has been a problem at West End, given its inability to really deal with the homeless population that gathered in the Foggy Bottom and West End neighborhood because of some very progressive church feeding programs and church shelter programs. And how successful that project will be remains to be seen.
It's interesting, Anthony Harvey, as we talk about the West End Library, Franklin Shelter, the Convention Center Hotel, and this latest hotel. There's an individual who factors into all of them. That's Councilmember Jack Evans, Chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee. He actually tried to give away West End Library to Anthony Lanier, a friend of his. Emergency legislation just before summer break, as you pointed out, that was overturned. Lanier is still the developer there. He was behind closing Franklin Shelter in Ward 2. He's the Ward 2 council member. He has been asked, in fact, I testified before him three times, to ask if Marriott is a client of his firm's. He's not just a council member. He's also on the payroll of Patton Boggs, largest lobbying firm in the country. He makes $240,000 a year on top of his $120,000 council salary. And is very much behind these large-scale developments as chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee in that capacity. It seems that all these large-scale projects that we're talking about, there's a central figure here, council member, chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee, Jack Evans.
Well, council member Evans has a vision for the district that is development-oriented. And he is the hardest-working council member on the issue. And he would take issue with your characterization of Anthony Lanier being singling out Anthony Lanier as a friend of his, because Councilmember Evans would say, all these developers are my friends. And his Patton Boggs law firm association is where he is simply their consultant, counselor, advisor, and that he doesn't have specific clients. But Councilmember Evans is as wily as he's been successful in promoting these development deals, and is very articulate at asserting that his development deals pay off in the end by eventually, in the long run, generating tax revenues that more than offset the tax expenditures. The problem always with the long run is, as John Maynard Keynes said so eloquently, the only thing we can say for certain about the long run is that we're all dead in the long run. And it's the here and now that is so vital to the district as it wrestles with its continuing failure to solve a lot of its fundamental problems, and wrestles with them in a time of declining tax revenues and runaway spending in some of the district programs.
Thank you for your time, Anthony Harvey. I hope this is the first of many conversations.
You're quite welcome. Thank you, Pete.